Welcome to the Muddy Puddle Teacher Podcast. This is episode 3, and today we've got June O'Sullivan, MBE, Early Years Educator and Specialist, Chief Executive of the London Early Years Foundation. And here she is today to chat all things muddy with us. So hello, June.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you for the invitation.
Not a problem. So I noticed you on Early Years TV with Kathy Brodie. I was also on there chatting to her not long ago, and I was just absolutely intrigued in you and your thoughts and opinions about early years, and I could not wait to get you on. So, June, tell us a little bit more about you and what you do and what you've done and what you do now.
I'm currently the chief executive of the London Early Years Foundation, and we're the I think we're the largest childcare social enterprise in the UK. And what I do there is I have developed a model which allows us to subsidise over a third of the places for children from disadvantaged backgrounds. It struck me many years ago that it was really unfair that children who benefit the most from really good quality early education haven't got natural access to it. And it's all a bit too random. So I thought, well, if there's a way I could do something and create a model, then that would be great. And if we could make it an independent model, that would even be better, so that we weren't dependent on grants or funding or anything where, you know, you have to then sort of follow off in different pathways or not be able to plan out over a period of time. So we started with 8 to 12 nurseries, and now we have 39. And a few more in the pipeline. So that's really what we do. And I am blessed to have over 800 wonderful staff, all very committed, and all of whom worked more or less throughout the whole of the pandemic. We have about 4,500 children attending.
Wow.
And we have also a very, very unique social pedagogy, which has taken me over 10 years to really finesse. And it has 7 strands. And these are very important for us because I have written that with the intention of driving quality for children from disadvantaged backgrounds.
Yeah.
Because some of the quality indicators for those children are slightly different, need to be deepened, you know? And it seems to me that we have a duty to make sure that children from a really who have a tough start should really be able to access best quality early years.
What are those 7 strands, June? What are those 7 strands?
So the 7 strands really are, the first strand is leadership for excellence. Now, as far as I can see from all of the work I've done, and I've written 2 books on leadership, leadership is it, really, you know, it, and it's not leadership in that sort of sense of the charismatic leader, you know, kind of, you know, sort of forging the way forward with everyone running behind like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, but actually the notion of leadership at every level. Yeah. People sometimes refer to it as distributed leadership. I'm currently writing a book with Munna Saka from the University of Middlesex about social leadership, because we think that actually leadership needs to morph into a much more social approach to things. And by that, it means, in a way, understanding the context we operate in now, which is much more around social divisions, social justice, but also social media. So that actually that you're reframing the way leadership can look and can deliver for everybody, but particularly for those who are more challenged. So leadership is, in one element of leadership is action research, which is really how do you create a kind of reflective kind of loop really in the way you support your staff. So action research could be anything from asking the question is, you know, are we doing the best outside, to you know, have you read the recent Marmot report about, you know, child obesity and child health. Mm-hmm. And it drives, I think, real good quality, because you get people thinking and talking and talking and thinking. Yeah. About what matters. And often people don't think that asking those kind of pedagogical questions is research, but actually when you frame it for them within a research kind of paradigm, they're really interested and think, oh yeah, I never would have really seen this. And that's very important, because there's a lot of academic research, but it's very distant sometimes from the reality of the practitioner, of the teacher, of the, you know, the person in the space. And for me, there's really interesting work done by Chris Pascal and her team on praxeological kind of development, where you're looking at theory, you're looking at research, but you're building practice into it. And I think it was in 2012, I found a quote from her which said that we were really, really stupid, actually, not to engage practitioners in research because we're missing out a whole kind of layer of opportunity for building quality. And that all to me is part of our strand number one. I won't take so long on all the other strands, I promise you.
Don't worry. And
the second strand is spiral curriculum. And people often think about pedagogy as the means by which you teach and the way that children learn. And that is entirely true. But pedagogy for me is a much broader kind of frame. And it's really about how you lead children to learn. And that is not just about the way you teach. And it's not just about the curriculum, which are the kind of opportunities, experiences, routines, activities and resources that you use to support the learning. It's much, much richer and deeper than that. And I'm really pleased that we're having a pedagogical conversation now more publicly across the sector. And I was quite keen on Ofsted's review of their inspection framework to take account of that, because I don't think till we give confidence to our colleagues and our practitioner colleagues and our teacher colleagues to talk about the very specific and, you know, and frames set of knowledge, understanding and behaviours necessary to drive really good early years practice. Unless we use the language and we talk about it all the time, you won't get that sense of ownership or confidence from our people. And we're not there yet. And I guess this was one of my intentions to really, really push the narrative. So in LEAF now, the staff are very comfortable using the words pedagogy, curriculum. Yeah. They know the difference between the two. And they understand about the pedagogical conversation because it's really coached into them and nurtured into them.
Yeah.
And then the third element of our strands are, you know, the environment. I mean, the environment is a teacher in itself. And so, you know, your point about the outdoors is really interesting one for me, because I think what's happened is the outdoors has been slightly hijacked. It's been hijacked by the notion that when you're outside, you have a classroom. Well, no, when you're outside, you're outside. And, you know, to kind of, in a way, I often go into settings who very well meaning, but they've set up outside the area for maths, the area for reading, and the area for this and the sort of, you know, the seven EYFS areas.
They're almost trying to extend the inside area outside rather than showing what's all good about outside.
Exactly. And I think that's a lack of confidence, because when you talk to them, they are not that sure about what they're doing, and but they feel that this is what good looks like, and they are not brave enough to be able to say the whole point of outside is that children learn in a different way outside, and that the outside itself has got its own sort of set of resources, and we don't need to, in a way, frame that for them. We need to give them the sense of
and it's a whole new area of practice. It's a whole new area of practice. I mean, just reflecting on my own process, you know, I've had to come out of the classroom to really educate myself about the outside space, why it's so different. And it's very hard. It's very hard to change. You almost have to become two teachers, one that does the indoor sessions and one that does the outdoor sessions. And it's almost like two personalities in a way. You really have got to rid yourself of all those indoor things that you did and start doing everything completely differently. And that's very hard. And it's hard time-wise as well. But yeah, it's interesting what you mentioned there.
Well, that's kind of like that sort of Howard Gardner stuff about multiple learning and multiple positions. And for us, I think outdoors, last year, I think it was last year, I wrote a book with my daughter, who's a gardener, on nursery gardens, because I was disappointed, actually, by the two things. One, everyone said, oh, I'm never going to be a gardener. I don't know a weed from a flower. And two, the lack of appreciation for mud and grass. And I've always been against this complete push to this sort of soft surface and stuff. And of course, Rospa would tell you that the increase in children's accidents is higher because now they haven't learned the art of falling and owning their bodies. And I think, you know, if you talk to someone like Lala Manners about the power of physical development and how children learn using their entire bodies, and that's often the case for boys. One of the pieces of research we did recently at LEAF was we noticed, we tracked our boys and noticed they weren't doing so quite so well. And We do know that boys learn differently, and we do know that boys take longer in some areas than girls, and then they catch up, and you know, yeah. and the same with girls needing, you know, other opportunities. And we just created this piece of research led by all the deputies called Boys Outside, and rethought the whole way we use the outside. Yeah. To give more freedom, to give more time, because at LEAF, children are encouraged to be outside 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
Parents found that a little bit of a challenge to start with. You know, there is still that fear that if you're outside in the cold, you're going to get sick. So, you know, it does need a lot of conversation about that.
Yeah.
3 hours in the day is what we expect to be outside. And if you're with us from 8 in the morning till 6, 3 hours isn't huge, you know.
Not at all. And I think from a parent perspective as well, I think they like to see their children come home tired.
Yeah.
You know, I think the more that children are cooped up inside, which we have been because of the pandemic, and I think we've all reflected a lot on how important our outdoor spaces are. I think that's really helped parents, educators, all of us to understand that actually outside is a great space to be in. And if the longer we can be in it, the better we tend to be parent-wise, adult-wise, child-wise. Do you agree with that?
I would agree. And I think that in our book, Fantastic Ideas for Nursery Gardens, one of the distinctions we made all the way through is that outdoors is, and gardening outdoors and experiencing the outdoors is different from activities outdoors.
Yeah.
And that you have to be very careful about the subtle difference about the use of it. And I mean, I speak as someone who has 39 nurseries across London, of which a number of them have lousy outdoors, outdoors. Yeah. And so for us, it's the question of what does the outdoors mean? And in the case of one of the nurseries in the House of Commons nursery, for example, the outdoors is St. James's Park. And those children are out there and they own that park. And now they've got a little allotment on the park and they know the park keeper and they've developed the whole story. Whereas one of my nurseries in, say, Ford Road in Barking and Dagenham has got a fantastic outdoor space.
Yeah.
But we've used that to build a fire pit and to do all sorts of other things to sort of develop the risk. So, you know, often people say, oh, but I've only got a bit of, you know, a square of concrete. We have that. I mean, Soho, our nursery in Soho, has an underground garden. It's in the middle of Soho. And if you know London and you know Soho, it's a very small part of the city. And it's under the ground, and Greg and his team there did just do amazing things with the children. And that's, again, literally under the restaurants of Soho.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Marsham Street Nursery has got a roof garden. And then downstairs we have a small little patch. And so the excuse that, oh, we haven't got a big enough space or a green enough space or a wide enough space, it really isn't acceptable because change it around.
I often get people as well that say they've got too much space.
Oh, yes, I know. I totally get that.
Yeah, and it's too overwhelming and it's too this. And I think what everyone's got to appreciate is that it does take a lot of their own critical thinking. They sometimes want a magic wand, someone to come in and tell them how to use their space. But every single outdoor space and situation is different. And the staff that come with it as well. I always talk to people about your own childhood and, you know, think back how outdoorsy you might have been as a child, which many of us really were. We did. We went out, didn't we? Played outside. And to bring those experiences back in to try and appreciate how important outdoors is to a childhood and to the childhood experience.
I agree. I think so the strand three of our pedagogy is the environment, and outdoors is a central part of that, whether it's a tiny bit of tarmac or whether it's a, you know, an acre of green. And then the fourth is, of course, the very important things where I think outside helps as well. It is the harmonious relationship, you know, where you can form positive, warm, engaging relationships, and children learn to negotiate with each other so much better outside, because often there's the adult isn't hovering over them, or they're not doing a specific planned activity. They have to figure out a way of relating to each other, solving a problem, creating a solution to a den, or creating a space where they have to work through. And I think we deprive our children of a lot of that by, you know, helicoptering over them, or not really giving them enough really trust that they won't be able to figure things out for themselves, because actually children are very good at figuring things out for themselves if we stand back and support rather than jump in all the time and, you know, solve the problem for them or take it away from them, which leaves them, I think, slightly deprived actually of kind of human opportunity for figuring out how you make relationships. Because like play, which is central to the early years thinking, play isn't always an easy process. People think play of that sort of, you know, the kind of television ads of everyone sort of happily sitting around, you know, playing together and stuff. Well, play is a painful process for a lot of children as they figure out who they're in and who they're not in, and how do they negotiate into a game, and how do they get chosen, and all of those things are very, very sort of kind of character forming. And they really have to be given the confidence and the ability to build their ability to be resilient and to figure out those kind of games and rules of the game in a way that they can, you know, in a way manage them. So us jumping in every 5 minutes not help them, because they have to do these things on their own when we're not there.
Toys have a place in that as well. I think something I really like about the outdoor space, and what I always try and promote, is a very natural outdoor space, not trying to put too much out there.
I agree.
So that the children have to negotiate with each other, because the, you know, the stick is whatever each one of them creates. I think something that I always try and discourage and try and help them with is to try and take that, stop putting those indoor toys outside, and try and let the children use what they've got, because then their social skills are really heightened then, and they've really got to use each other to create games and fun.
Entirely. And that takes us to the fifth strand of our pedagogy, which is safe, fit and healthy. And I think the whole health and safety kind of narrative has really damaged the outdoors and the children's freedom, actually. This paranoia about them falling and hurting themselves, the kind of litigious environment we've allowed to create as parents, as members of society, as citizens, where, you know, people are very quick to want to sue or to point fingers or complain. And actually, no one's doing any child any favor on this. No. So we really push against that, and we have trees and, you know, sort of rocks and wood and real tools and, you know, really muddy stuff and all that kind of thing. And we have had that for a long time now. To really, in a way, build children's ability to be safe by being able to hold a tool properly, by being able to manage these kind of things. You know, and I think, you know, in terms of safe and healthy, we have not really done ourselves any favors. I think we've, you know, on the continuum of safe, fit and healthy, we have gone far, far too down there, safe. And I think that's impacting on the fit. I mean, what's the obesity standards at the moment are huge. 1 in 4 at the moment of children will leave primary school, and it's actually dropping to 1 in 3 right now. With all the long-term implications of that, which is just crazy. And, you know, and them, and also the kind of narrowness of, you know, managed play, managed experiences outside, no risk around anything. You know, there is no risk factor in someone's life. You're already removing one of their core essential abilities to judge
and to make opinions. And what are the other strands? Do you think we were on?
So we've got to 5. Number 6 is family, home learning, and you know how you bridge this. And then finally, it's community. We call it multi-generational. We've been doing it for about 12 years, and it's really about reaching in and out of the community. And we didn't choose the term intergenerational for very, very deliberately, because that was often perceived as simply the old and the young. Whereas we think it's important to have teenagers, you know, every age of people all the way up. And of course, older people. And we have great relationships with people living in local homes and various other things. But it's really about understanding that a child is part of the whole, and there's a journey from when they're little to when they're old. And so we have teens and toddlers and various projects, as well as just bringing young people in, you know, from schools, who then often stay with us as part of our apprenticeships, and then come to work with us. And we noticed that particularly around males, because we have campaigned for men in childcare for I can't tell you how many years, and we have a high proportion of our own staff who are men, but it's very low, you know, really, in terms of the standards. But you know, the government's target was something like 2-3%, so you know, that's a pretty low starting point. I definitely exceed that and beyond, but and there's loads of colleagues in the sector who are very, very supportive of that, and very I think we've opened the door of that debate, and parents have engaged in that debate as well. So I think, so they're the strands, you know, leadership for excellence, spiral curriculum, enabling environment, harmonious relationships, safe, fit and healthy, home learning, bridge, and multi-generational. And that really wraps everything we do, every decision we make, and every process that's across the organization are wrapped through one of those seven strands.
I really, really love those seven strands, June, really do. That was lovely. And do you know what? Normally I would come and have a separate question now and talk about outdoor learning, but to be honest, it was all entwined in that. And, you know, I think what you've shared with us is going to be really helpful to the Muddy Puddle teachers. Before we leave you, I went on your website and I noticed that you do advertise for people that want to work within your nurseries. Can you just tell everybody your website if they are interested?
Also, if you have nothing to do over Christmas, I've just written a new book called The A to Z of Early Years, where we've just done little, because people are busy, I've just written it in short chapters, but I've touched on all of the big issues of the day in terms of early years. And you know that outdoors and gardening and child obesity will be amongst those. Absolutely. And then finally, if you are looking for a job, we are recruiting, because the need of small children from disadvantaged backgrounds is growing, not reducing. So we've certainly been looking to open nurseries, or to support nurseries that may well find it difficult to recover from COVID. And that's likely to be in areas of poverty and deprivation. So if you go on our website and log in, we offer a, you know, if you come to work for us, you can start at level one and you can go to level six. We've got a degree with the University of Wolverhampton, and now we've got the top-up degree. So if you've got a foundation degree, you can do the top-up with us as well. So we're very, very looking forward to people. We like people who like outside. We like people who like natural things. We like people who are a bit risky, a bit more willing to do stuff, get a bit messy, get engaged, and be interested in the beautiful art and science of being an early years teacher.
Absolutely. Well, thank you ever so much, June. Thank you. And hopefully speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now.